Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, so now it's official. He is gone. Philip Rivers announced that he is retiring. He told the San Diego Union-Tribune, quote, "It's just time." He added, quote, "It's just right," end of quote. And, you know, I got to agree on so many different levels. And not because of the career he's had, but because he also said in a separate statement, quote, "Every year, January 20th, is a special and emotional day. It is St. Sebastian's feast day, the day I played in the AFC Championship without my ACL, and now the day that after 17 seasons, I'm announcing my retirement from the National Football League. Thank you, God, for allowing me to live out my childhood dream of playing quarterback in the NFL." End of quote. All right, so a lot to unpack in that statement. I do want to say his defining moment of his entire career was 13 years ago. Remember, he played in the AFC Championship game against the Patriots only 6 days after having surgery to remove the ruptured ACL in his right knee. I mean, think about that for a minute. Forget Willis Reed. Talk about Philip Rivers. Because Rivers, hobbling around that field, trying to find a way to get a win against the Patriots dynasty, when other guys would be sitting at home, really was iconic. This guy's dragging his leg around, trying to drag his team to the Super Bowl. And the fact that he never won a Super Bowl, the fact that he never got to a Super Bowl, sure as hell was not due to a lack of talent, or a lack of skill, or a lack of effort, or a lack of heart, or desire, or passion. So what I'm saying is, go ahead and start measuring this guy for a gold jacket right now, because there's no doubt that he's earned that spot in Canton. In fact, not just a spot there, but on the very first ballot. He retires as the fifth all-time passer in terms of passing yardage, 421 TD passes, and you want a guy that you can count on to play no matter what, that's your guy. He was second only to Brett Favre in consecutive games played. In other words, every Sunday, no matter what the weather was, no matter what was happening during the season, no matter what was going on with his body, 17 was going to be out there. And honestly, the guy can still sling it. No doubt about that. Definitely no doubt in his mind. As he told the UT, quote, "I can sit here and say, I can still throw it. I love to play," end of quote. And see, that to me is also where there's some separation with Philip Rivers and so many other guys. There aren't many other guys who play that game who loved it as much as Philip Rivers. In fact, there aren't too many people who have done anything with more juice and more passion than Philip Rivers. As proof of that, check out his new job, his new gig. He's not going to sit on a beach. He's not going to sit in a studio somewhere. He's going to be a high school football coach at St. Michael Catholic High School in Alabama. I mean, that is the absolute best. That is so on brand. How awesome would it be to play high school football for Coach Philip Rivers? Let me get back to that statement for a moment, too. The statement also includes lines like, "I appreciate the opposing defenses, making it challenging physically and mentally every week. I also enjoyed the banter," end quote. Man, that is the truth. Fact, nobody enjoyed the banter more than Philip Rivers. Hell, Philip Rivers revolutionized the banter game. Four of the best words in the history of the NFL are Philip Rivers mic'd up. Because when Philip Rivers was on the field and he would say, "I'm mic'd today," you knew something good was going to happen. You knew you were going to get like the iconic shout of "quit crying" that he directed at the Titans.
"Oh, quit crying! Quit crying! You're talking the whole game, now you're on mute!
Quit crying." And of course, you'd probably chase that with a "dadgummit."
"Dadgummit."
And you were going to hear him correcting the opposing defenses. J.J. Watt had this great tweet this morning. Quote, "I'll never forget lining up for a play and Phil pointing to one of our linebackers and telling him he was lined up wrong based off the blitz. And we were about to run and being 100% correct about it. Ha ha. One of the smartest I've ever played against and a hell of a competitor." End of quote. The only thing wrong with that tweet is the fact that Watt used the word "hell." And smart man that he is, he corrected it with "heck of" 30 minutes later. Rivers certainly was not shy about letting you know how smart he was, how much homework he had done, and he would correct you and your defense if you guys were wrong.
Hey, I can just tell you right now, 57's firing. He's the new Clowney. 41's the mic. Yeah. Told you. Hey. You don't play Mike. Why would you line up there? Quit just making up alerts. You're like, you hear things, you scream, reverse. You don't know what's going
on. This guy's too much. You're not the mic. Why are you lined up there? Like he's correcting them on their defensive alignment. And if he didn't like what he was seeing, he was going to let you know that as well.
Unstinking believable. That's horse mess.
Unstinking believable. That's horse mess. I think that's probably the part or the thing I'm going to miss most about Philip. I mean, I'm going to miss the freaky throws, the unorthodox form, the facial expressions on the sideline. But most of all, I think I'm going to miss all that dad gum trash talk. Like, you know, if something good just happened, he was going to let you hear that too.
90-yard touchdown! 90-yard touchdown!
Hey, Sam, too. You see, I ain't talking, bro. Stay humble, bro.
But you know he's right.
Stay humble. Stay humble, cuz.
I can be excited.
Yeah, but don't do that by my ear. Don't do it by my ear. Now.
I will do it by my ear.
No.
Hey,
that's
one,
what I do.
1-7.
That's what I do.
I'll holler at you after the game. 17, just keep talking.
That is one of my favorite exchanges ever during a game, and there's not one curse word in it. Like, well, actually, there was, but not from Phil. Hey, 17, stay humble. Hey, 17, keep talking. He's like, what, I'm not going to be excited? Yeah, I'll say it. I'll say it right in your ear. And if he wasn't breaking down the details of the play, he was just shouting one word.
Go Chargers, yes! Are tumbling.
Yes! Yes!
I mean it. Find me anybody anywhere who loves anything as much as this guy loves ball. And it wasn't even all on Mike. Check out this story that Darius Slay told me at the Super Bowl last year about facing Rivers.
We walking through the tunnel. I'm just minding my business, dapping up my teammates. I heard him yell out my name, Slay. In the tunnel. So I turn around, and he's like, yeah, early and often, Slay, early and often. I said, oh, no. So I went to my one of my safeties, Quandre Diggs. I'm like, hey, man, we got to go right now. He done talked to crazy, and we got to get right. It made me laugh because the fact that how he said
you gotta respect that, man.
I respect it the best because he wants you to bring your best out of you, so he trying to mess with your mind a little bit. But for him not to cuss and say it, it was making it even funnier because I probably would have cussed.
No, but he doesn't, though.
He doesn't. That's what makes it funny. That's making it so funny.
That's so funny that he could talk that kind of junk without cussing.
Yes, he talked a lot of it.
Every play.
Keenan caught a pass on me, and now, you know, he driving down the field, walking down. I'm just getting up, walking. I heard him say, yeah, early. Yeah, I told you. Yeah. Like, I was like, ooh, wee.
It's so good. Philip Rivers seeing Darius Slay in the tunnel, quote, early and often, Slay. Early and often, Slay. Philip Rivers really is one of one. And if you need further evidence of that, check out this next part from that statement. Quote, I appreciate the referees for putting up with all my fussing. I think I was right most of the time. Dadgummit.
Dadgummit.
Once again, legend. Nobody else is going to work in a dadgummit into a retirement statement. I'm sure we've heard it on the field. He worked it into a retirement statement. And certainly, they're not going to do it in referencing the officials, which is awesome. And the guy was not afraid to let the refs hear about it.
Hey, Mr. Ref! Hey, whatever! Hey, what are you looking at? Oh, why, yeah, though? I just don't understand why you pick it up. You must have thought it to throw it.
And let me interject something personally, too. Over the years, I've really, really enjoyed talking to Philip Rivers. As an example, back in 2017, he talked about the role of being the face of a franchise and the responsibility that comes along with that.
Well, I think very seriously, and I think it's a heck of an honor, really, and a heck of a responsibility to have. And I'd like to consider myself a heck of a leader, and I think all guys that are leaders, that have been leaders in any wherever they are and what their profession is, it's them first understanding it takes everybody. I never have liked the phrase, oh, it's my team. But I know that some of that comes with the position. You want to be a servant leader, and you want to know that the guys, you're one of the guys. And it's a special role. It's one I dreamed about being in. I had all those guys, Marino and Elway and Montana and Aikman and Favre and Manning, and all those guys were on my wall as young kids. And that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be playing NFL quarterback, and I've been able to live out that dream now for over a decade, and I don't take it for granted.
I think you can tell by how much time I'm spending on this in the open that I hold this guy in really high regard. He never did take any of it for granted, and he's been a heck of a leader. And as proof of that, he did close out the statement by saying this, quote, "Thanks to the fans in San Diego and around the nation that both cheered and booed. Special thanks to my teammates. Without a doubt, my favorite part of the game, being a teammate. Thank you for being mine. Lastly, thank you to my wife and my best friend Tiffany and her children, Hallie, Caroline, Grace, Gunner, Sarah, Peter, Rebecca, Claire, Anna. Could not have done it without y'all's unwavering support. As my playing career comes to an end, the next chapter begins." And it has been an amazing journey, Philip. In fact, I can't wait to see what's next. Nuke Chepi. Yeah! Nuke Chepi.
Yes! Yes!
Nuke Chepi. I would imagine after a really good workout, you're craving some protein. So where do you go to get it? Change up. Don't make a shake. Don't eat a bar. Grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper instead. Hear me out. Why Old Trapper? Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty. It's tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. And it's a family-owned business. They take their smoked beef extremely seriously. You can taste it in every single bite. I mean, who wants dried, tough beef in a bag? Nobody. It's like eating an old shoe. Old Trapper, though, is the real deal. Comes in four amazing flavors. Old Fashioned, Teriyaki, Peppered, and Hot and Spicy. So the next time you want a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Look for it in the Clearview bag. That way you can see exactly what you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? He is Mick Cronin. Mick, how you doing, Mick? How's life for you right now?
Life is good, Romy. Anytime you wear shorts to work, man, it's a great day.
I got to ask you about that, Mick. In fact, you got me there way faster or way earlier than I was going to. But what about that? For instance, Mick, I had Greg McDermott on the show recently, and he was talking about how coaches are a little more casual now on the sideline. You are one of the best-dressed guys in basketball. You're a David August man. What's this season been like then in that regard?
Yeah, I had to go to my guy Johnny O, John O'Donnell, Chris's brother, the actor. He's a Bruin. He made us some outfits to wear, so it's comfortable. I'll tell you that, man. It's nice not having to carry your suit on road trips, you know, your suit bags and all that. But as you know, David August is they do a great job. So I'll be back in the suits next year. I've heard some people say you guys ought to stay casual, but I don't see that happening for too long.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that, Mick. I think some guys are going to stay casual. And, you know, I wear some Johnny O, too. I'm a David August guy, first and foremost. But I've thrown down for Johnny O. Johnny O has some really good stuff, too.
So oh, yeah. Big I time. Feel you. Yeah. He stepped up, took care of our staff. Because, as you know, we Under Armour, they dropped the UCLA University deal in the summer. It's in litigation. And we start with Nike next July. So we were in limbo, so he stood in big time for us, Johnny did.
He was smart like that. Mick Cronin joining us. So, Mick, you beat Washington Saturday. That was your sixth straight win. You're 7-0 in conference play for the first time since the early 90s. So what is the mood like around the team and the program right now?
Well, I tell you one thing. It's the whole thing's surreal because, you know, you go out to play a game and there's nobody in the stands. It's completely empty. I give all these kids credit for what they're going through, you know, from quarantining to maintaining their intensity and their focus to play to win. And I think it's going to get harder because it's getting longer. You know, Jim, we started September 21st in college basketball, really right around there. What are we at? So, you know, from a 4-month standpoint. And, you know, how many teams are – the kids are just – you know, how long can you keep your focus as far as – and your discipline, right? From college, nightlife, socializing, as you come down the home stretch here, your dedication off the floor. My guys have been awesome with it. We haven't had, knock on wood, we haven't had one positive test since we started, and that's allowed us to grow as a team. It's just, it's going to be crazy, Jim, when you get to NCAA tournament time. It would be so sad that a team's fate could be affected by a positive test or their chance to make a tournament run.
We're talking to Mick Cronin. Mick, it's so true. And everybody really is living this thing day to day, and you're hoping that everybody's making the right choices, the right decisions. They get lucky. You know, what about that big stage? One of the things I know you've talked about is the fact that the players are working towards that very thing, working towards the NCAA tournament, working towards playing on the big stage in front of big crowds. So what's it like when you go out on the road and the fans aren't in the building and they're not getting that opportunity?
But I'll tell you, it was the most unusual when we went down to Arizona, because, you know, down in Tucson,
right,
they have great home, they have just a great home court, great fan base, and it's fun to play there, even though you're the enemy. And to walk out there on a Saturday night in an empty gym, I mean, it was surreal. Even our players were like, I mean, this is crazy. I mean, it is so different. You know, and the hard thing for us, you know, on the West Coast is, in California, our players' parents can't even come to the games. So that's really unfortunate. You know, you just hope we get to Indianapolis. You know, we're part of the tournament, hopefully, that our players' families will at least get to come to the games. But, you know what, Jim, they'd rather be playing than not. I mean, this is the key, you know, this is what they want. At the high level, these kids have worked their whole life to get to the point where they're playing basketball at UCLA. So they understand people got it a lot worse than them out there through the effects of the pandemic. So they're just happy to be playing.
We're talking to UCLA basketball coach Mick Cronin. You know, Mick, the process has been so challenging. You know, for example, at the end of last season and the off season, everything's been impacted by COVID, like you and I are talking about, but you're having a lot of success. You had a process, you're working your process. How have you maintained your vision and executed it with all these obstacles in front of you? What's your process been like for dealing with it?
I would say, Jim, probably something that helps us is I'm not a fluff guy. The tough Irish side of me, you know, we don't talk about injuries. We don't talk about anything that would be an excuse. We don't talk about our feelings. You know, it's one thing I try to train the guys is for life. You know, I just try to train them that everything's not always going to go your way, right? You know, you either get the job done or you don't, because when you leave college, right, you're in the real world, and you either produce or you're fired. Like, you don't get to keep your scholarship if you play bad. You're going to get cut from your pro team, whether it's in the NBA, whether it's in Europe, South America, wherever it may be. Whatever job you have, if you don't produce, you're going to get fired. So I try to train them for that. So in our process, it's irrelevant who's in the stands. It's irrelevant that, unfortunately, Chris Smith, our senior best returning player, got hurt and is out for the season. It's irrelevant. All the stuff that's going on. You know, there's a ball, there's a gym, we're allowed to play, so there's no excuses. That's just kind of how we operate.
It's kind of binary, right, Mick? It's binary. Yep. Either it is or it isn't. And, you know, to that point, it's kind of counterintuitive. Like, you have this tough love. It's almost like parenting, right? I do this with Janet, my wife, where you want to tell the kids the way things are because you want to prepare them, but then maybe she on the other side is trying to protect them from something. And then I say, well, you're not doing them any favors if you don't let them know exactly how it is. As a head coach, how do you balance that tough love between, hey, man, I really do care about you. I really do. However, there is a standard here that you have to uphold, and I'm doing it for your own good.
I think that, I mean, that's the key to coaching, right? Because nobody's going to follow you as a coach. Your soldiers aren't going to follow you into battle if they don't believe that you'll take a bullet for them. So, you know, my thing is, you know, 99% of the time, I'm on their side. Especially in college, right? Our kids aren't paid to play. They're under a lot of pressure. They got academics to deal with. I'm their fiercest critic in the gym when we're trying and coaching them, right? I'm their drill sergeant, right? Getting them ready. But outside of here in the media, I'm their biggest protector, you know, so I don't want to hear anybody banging on any of my guys for anything. Look, they're kids, they're trying to do their best. Blame me for the loss. Don't blame them. I think that's the most important thing. And the guys know how, if you're around kids every day, look, you got no shot at being phony about it. They know. I mean, they know, because things are going to happen, Jim, where a kid may make a mistake and you're going to, that's your chance to, it's like, well, coach is hard on me about paying attention and getting my job done. But, you know, when I have a personal problem, he's the first guy there to help me. So I think that's the key to all of it. It's going to happen over time. You know, kids are going to see who you really are. And I think, you know, it's important to have your whole coaching staff like that.
They know. They know. Mick Cronin joining us. So, Mick, one last thought because you mentioned Chris Smith. I mean, the thing that's striking to me, at least from the outside looking in, he gets ruled out of the season with a knee injury, but it seems like the team, I would never say you're better without him, but they just kept right on rolling despite that bad news. How do you explain that?
We're fortunate. I'd say the one position that we could withstand a loss was on the wing. Point guard, big man, we're not that deep. But on the wing, we're a very deep team. We have a lot of options, a lot of guys that can score. I obviously, we're not better without him, but you're right. I mean, we have continued to win, but it's because of our depth at that position. You know, we had recruited as if we didn't know if he was going to come back for his senior year. So when he came back, it allowed us to be a much deeper team. The addition of Johnny Juzang, who came back to the West Coast, Harvard Westlake kid, the 6'6 guard for us, made us an even deeper team. So we're just fortunate that our loss, although it was tragic, and Chris is doing great, he had a surgery, and he's going to be fine. But it was just in a position where we had some depth.
UCLA is playing some great ball right now. They're 11-2 overall. They're undefeated in Pac-12 play. He is the head coach. He's a friend of the program. UCLA is at Cal tomorrow. Mick, it is great to get caught up. I appreciate you. Appreciate the relationship, and it's good to talk some ball with you. Mick, thanks so much.
It's great to catch up, Romy. Hopefully we'll do it again in March during the NCAA tournament. It'd be great.
Since MMA Hall of Famer Tito Ortiz was sworn in as city council member in his hometown of Huntington Beach, California, that means there are 202 weeks left in his term. The question that I cannot help but ask right now, is this dude going to make it the distance? Now, understand this. My point of view is as nonpartisan and apolitical as it gets. You understand this. You know this. I'm a sports talk show host who does not live in HB. I'm just covering the happenings of a UFC legend. The problem here is that there are happenings to begin with. There should not be happenings. Not for that guy, not for that job, not in that town. And really, for most politicians, especially a local politician, especially a city council member. You know, honestly, it's not a show. They're not here to entertain. They should be borderline anonymous. They should be boring. We should not know what they're up to unless they're making the city a better place. They're making the neighborhoods better, the schools better. What you don't want is to be a train wreck. Unfortunately, that's Tito right now. The least anonymous city council member of all time, who's already made national news on three different occasions in 6 short weeks as an elected local official. That's not easy to do. The first time was when he had a little trouble repeating the oath of office at his swearing in.
I solemnly swear. I do solemnly affirm.
Discharge the duties.
Wow. Remember, this is the dude who's in the on-deck circle to become the mayor. He's not just a city council member. He's next in line to run the whole damn show, should anything happen to the current head honcho of HB. 3 weeks after getting sworn in, Tito then posted this video from the Huntington Beach Library parking lot.
Well, we have our first workshop here for Huntington Beach City Council, and we're doing it at Huntington Beach Library. I go in for the meeting, and Kim Carr says I can't come in without a mask. Now I got to do it from Zoom. Great way to start the new year off. Embarrassing.
Pretty mature. Pretty professional. Pretty responsible. I mean, that's one of the more amazing things you're ever going to hear, right? Tito Ortiz, city council member, acting like a victim from the front seat of his luxury sled, complaining and naming names that he was not allowed inside a library to take part in a city council meeting without a mask. I mean, the entitlement is so thick, you need a jackhammer to bust right through it. And even that might not do the job. My favorite part, though, is when he says, quote, Kim Carr says, I can't come in without a mask. Now I got to do it from Zoom. End of quote. The thing is, T, you don't have to do it from Zoom. Saying you have to do something implies that you do not have a choice. You could, I don't know, put on a mask like everybody else and sit down alongside your colleagues in person. Just a thought, T. I love how the other 9 council members had to connect to the public library Wi-Fi just to bring Tito into a Zoom call because he was too stubborn to put a mask on. I also love that Tito is on a Zoom call from his luxury sled, which was parked outside 10 feet from the actual meeting. Like, this guy used to fight Chuck Liddell. Now he's fighting mask policies at the local library. Man, have some dignity. Pick your fights. 3 weeks into the term, and he's already at war with fellow council members. And 3 weeks before that, he was at war with the simple act of speaking.
Do I solemnly swear?
I do solemnly affirm.
Discharge the duties.
All right, so why don't we stop discharging the duties for a minute and get to the present day. Let's see who he's fighting now. Because over the weekend, Tito posted another video with his objections to the current state of health regulations. Except this time it was not directed at Kim Carr or a public library or the duties. It was directed at a small business called TK Burgers. Let's check in with the vice mayor of HB and see exactly what is wrong now.
So you know every Sunday I always come to TK Burger. So they won't let me order unless I have a mask to come in. First time all year that I've actually been forced to wear a mask. But I'm not wearing a mask. TK Burger, lose my business, you lose HB's business. Suck.
Well, there you have it. 6 weeks into his term as a city council member, and Tito Ortiz is out here shredding the very local small businesses that he is supposed to represent in the very city that he is supposed to work for. You can't make this stuff up, although I wish you could. I wish we did make that up, because it's really sad and really pathetic that this is a real thing. My man just rolled tape of himself. He not only did this, and there's not only tape of it, he rolled tape of himself. He turned the phone on himself and said, quote, "You see, every Sunday, I always come to TK Burgers. They won't let me order unless I have a mask to come in. First time all year that I've actually been forced to wear a mask, but I'm not wearing a mask. TK Burger, you lose my business. You lose HB's business. You suck."
So you know every Sunday I always come to TK Burger. So they won't let me order unless I have a mask to come in. First time all year that I've actually been forced to wear a mask. But I'm not wearing a mask. TK Burger, lose my business. You lose HB's business. Suck.
Did he really tag that with "you suck"? I mean, pick the dumbest part of that video. Just try. How about that part outside of TK's where Tito says, quote, "You lose my business. You lose HB's business. You suck."
TK Burger, lose my business. You lose HB's business. Suck.
Wow. Spoken like a true city council member who is out there working for the people and the city. First off, TK does not need your business. It's one of the best burgers in Orange County. I would know. It's literally the go-to of this program. And I'm not playing, nor is that hyperbole, nor am I exaggerating, nor do we have a business relationship. When we have to stay late to tape out a podcast, we hit our local TK's, which is not Tito's local TK's, but it's the same joint. Same owner, same menu, same great grub. And guess what, T? There's a line wrapped around that spot every single day. You know it, and I know it. So they don't need you. Nor is the entire city of HB going to stop eating there because some dude without a mask told them to. Now, to his credit, he did realize, or somebody made him realize, that he should not be smashing local businesses. Not when he's a city council member, and especially not during a pandemic, when everybody is struggling to survive. So he apologized on Facebook. He wrote in part, quote, "I made a bad decision. My emotions got the best of me. This is our favorite burger place in OC. We have been going there over the last 10 years. I never had to wear a mask to order takeout. I let my emotions get the best of me. I understand this is a small business. I would never want to ruin that business. I apologize to TK Burgers for my decision. End quote. So when you're apologizing to local businesses and saying that your emotions got the best of you 6 weeks into a four-year term, maybe you put the phone down and put the mask on. Dude, you're an elected official. It's time to act like it. Now, Tito, repeat after me. I, Tito Ortiz. Do I solemnly swear?
Do I solemnly swear?
To start wearing a mask and stop fighting with my own city.
Discharge the duties.
Listen, you can rain out baseball. You can rain out tennis. You can rain out golf, but you cannot rain out life. Sometimes, no matter how hard it's coming down out there, you've just got to get in your car, brave the elements, and get to the people who need you most. That's why you need windshield wipers that you can trust. You need wipers from Bosch. Rated by Fortune as 2020's number one auto parts supplier, Bosch makes high-performance windshield wipers that handle the harshest weather conditions so you can reach life's important moments. See what matters most with Bosch. Charles Huff is my guest. Charles, great to have you on.
How's everybody doing?
What's up? How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing fantastic, man. I really have checked off a lot of boxes in the last few days. I've taken the best job in America. I got a chance to be introduced as a head coach, and I am now on one of my favorite radio shows of all time. Like, I don't know if life can get any better.
My man, this is one of my favorite starts to any interview that I've ever done, and I've done thousands of interviews. Charles Huff is my guest. I appreciate you saying that, and I appreciate you. So you were officially introduced yesterday. What have the last few days been like for you and your family?
You know, it's been great, man. We are thrilled to be a part of this program, to have this opportunity. My family is back in Tuscaloosa. My son is 8 years old, and he is on a basketball team, and he would not miss a game for the world. So I was like, hey, Dad's going to be introduced as a head coach on Tuesday. He was like, I have a game. I said, well, you're right. But it's been great, man. They're going to get up here in a couple weeks. We're grinding through right now, trying to check all the boxes, get the right staff in here, get our players rolling. We're fired up, man.
Man, that is awesome. Charles Huff joining us. You know, the story goes that when you went to Hampton as a walk-on, you ended up playing guard, fullback, tight end, before being the center and team captain as a senior. Like, as you look back, and I know you've got a lot of work in front of you and you're eager to get to it, but when you look back as your time as a player there, what were you like when you first arrived on campus?
You know, I was like a lot of the kids, you know, that are here today. You know, I came in and thought I was all world and thought I was just going to walk in and take over the world. And you realize that, you know, every step in your life, especially when you go from high school to college, it's changed. You know, there's a lot of good players around. You don't know what you don't know. You're not as fast as you think. And then, you know, you look back 4 years from now, and everything your coach told you, all the experiences you went through prepared you for those moments. And, you know, you flip the clock around, and it's in that same spot when I'm standing in front of that podium and I'm, you know, accepting or, you know, doing the introduction speech for, you know, this head job.
Talking to Charles Huff, you know, I love that. You don't know what you don't know, and then you learn. You talk about a coach. You played for the great Joe Taylor at Hampton. It's clear how much respect he has for you. What did you learn from him? What was your biggest takeaway from your time with him?
You know, the biggest thing for us and me, what we learned from Coach Taylor is he really took pride in turning young boys into young men. And just the fundamental pieces of how to be a man, how to conduct yourself. I'll never forget, we used to wear a shirt and tie to travel. And at that time, we were like, we put on church clothes. Why are we doing this? And he taught us all how to tie a tie. He taught us all, you know, why it was, you know, the right thing to walk with your head high and show you were disciplined and show class. And those fundamental pieces I still carry with me every day of my life. And again, we walked in there, we didn't know what we didn't know, and he taught us those things, and those fundamental pieces have stuck with us, me and my players and teammates, the rest of our lives.
We are talking to Marshall head football coach Charles Huff. You know, he said something else about you. that I thought the praise was really, really high. Quote, some people just got it, and Charles is one of those guys. Everything that it takes to be successful, he had no problem doing. The early morning get-up, the weight room, coming back late, got a test the next day. His parents did an outstanding job raising him because he's a first-class guy. I'm super proud. End of quote. I mean, that's extremely high praise. I'm curious, where did that mindset and knowledge on what it took to be successful. How much of that did you get from him, and how much of that came from something else, maybe your parents?
Yeah, you know, I was blessed enough to be raised by my mom and my dad, you know. So my dad was hard on us. Discipline was very important, doing the right thing because the right thing's always the right thing. Treating people the right way, understanding that you got to work harder than the next man in order for you to get what you want. And my mom was big on faith. Regardless of how late a game you had on Saturday or what you thought you were doing on Saturday, you were going to go to Sunday school Sunday. And just that simple understanding of there are more things that are important than what you want to do. It's about how you do them.
We're talking to Charles Huff. Of course, you're coming to Marshall from Alabama. What about your time with Nick Saban? I mean, obviously, you're going to take a little something from everybody you work with and work for and work alongside. What about Nick Saban? What did you learn from him?
Yeah, I tell people all the time, Coach Saban has probably changed my life the most. He taught me, or has taught me, that consistency in your approach is the key to success. You set your plan, you have a plan, and you stay consistent. And the details and the choices and decisions that you make on a daily basis are the things that are going to separate you. And everybody can pretty much agree that he is the master of consistency. And whether we won a game by 60 or we came up short, it was the exact same approach. It was the exact same message. We went right back to work the next day, and we approached every game like it was the only game on the schedule, one play at a time for 60 minutes. And that's something that I'm going to be carrying with me for a very long time.
I think that is the best explanation of the so-called Saban process that I've ever heard. That was perfectly stated. So, you know, the thinking in the past is that when somebody gets a head coaching job, it probably means you're walking into a situation that needs a lot of help. But in your case, you're walking into a program that's been to four straight bowl games. So how do you go about building on that, and what does the next step look like for this program?
You know, that's perfect. You know, I had my first team meeting last night, and I told those guys, you know, this is not a rebuild, like you said. This is not a, you know, coming into a 1-9 program and we got to start from the bottom. I told these guys, I am here to win now. And what I am here to do is help them get 6 inches better. They came up close in the championship game, came up close in a few other games of the season, and we're trying to improve 6 inches. When you're an elite at whatever you do, so you look at LeBron James, Stephon Curry, Michael Jordan, those players work all year long to get just a little bit better. LeBron James is not going to make leaps and bounds in his skill set, but he's trying to get a little bit better so that maybe he gets 2 more points in the big game, or maybe he plays 2 more minutes because his condition improves. And that's what I told those guys. We're trying to get 6 inches better. But we got to work all year just for those 6 inches. And that small movement and improvement is in the details.
We're talking to Charles
Huff. Hand behind the line, not on the line.
Right.
You know, tucking your shirt in, finishing through the line, not to the line. Going to class 5 minutes early, not on time.
It's a mentality. It's a lifestyle. So top to bottom, what is a Charles Huff Marshall football team going to look like?
Yeah, we're going to be physical, we're going to be fast, we're going to be aggressive. We are going to play one play at a time for 60 minutes with a focus and intensity that our opponents cannot match. At the end of the game, we want teams to say, I don't want to play that team again. They play with an unbelievable self-discipline, and their competitive spirit is unmatchable regardless of the scoreboard. They were up 60, and they were still trying to score. I don't want to play them again.
Damn, coach, put me in. I mean, like, I've got no ability, Not much size. I'm a 50-something-year-old man, but put me in. I'm ready to play.
We can find a spot for you. We'll run you on a bubble route, throw the ball the other way. You can be a decoy.
I'll do that. I'll do that, and I'll do that really well, by the way. I'll do that really well. Listen, one last thought. We talked about the impact that guys have had on you. You were also a special teams coordinator at Penn State. Really quickly, Saquon Barkley said the impact that he had on me helped mold me into the player and the man that I am today. What's it mean to you to hear that from him?
Well, that's big because Saquon was one of the players who came in. He wasn't very highly recruited, and he came in and he did everything I and the program and Coach Franklin asked him to do. And when you have those type of kids, you hope that they have the success that they deserve, and Saquon was one of them. So for him to say that I had that impact on him, he had a bigger impact on me.
He is the head football coach at Marshall. They're coming off a season where they were in first place in the CUSA East Division. This is a great opportunity, and the right guy is getting it. Charles, great to have you on the show. Thank you so much, and I know you and I will come together and do this again. Great to have you.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Jason in Oregon, you made it in. Jason, what's your beef?
Dude, my beef is with Washington County, dude. My freaking ex-girlfriend's boyfriend held me down while my freaking ex-son-in-law beat me in the face with a f***ing stick.
That's not a good call. No.
It's a lot of bleep going on there.
I don't like that call.
Like,
not a very good call.
Just kind of curious. Who was holding him down? Who was beating him with a stick? Why were they beating him with a stick? Why were they beating him with a stick in the face? Who was it again? One more time,
dude,
Alvin.
My beef is with Washington County, dude. My freaking ex-girlfriend's boyfriend held me down while my freaking ex-son-in-law beat me in the face with a f***ing stick.
All right, so I got a couple of thoughts. Number one, why is that the fault of the county?
Not a very good call.
Just kind of curious. Now, I guess what my takeaway from that is, are you telling me that the police came and they did not arrest the person who held you down or the person who beat you in the face with a stick, but they arrested you? Is that why you have a beef with the county? Also, there are too many double negatives going on here. There are too many exes. Like, I can't follow the family tree. It's kind of like my ex-girlfriend's brother-in-law's first cousin. This is really complicated, and he's talking really quickly, and it seemed like he still had that train on the tracks. He had a couple of frickins, which I would have allowed, before he just snapped.
Dude, my beef is with Washington County, dude. My freaking ex-girlfriend's boyfriend held me down while my freaking ex-son-in-law beat me in the face with a f***ing stick.
So again, my ex-girlfriend's boyfriend held me down while my ex-brother-in-law or son-in-law beat him with a stick. Like, I literally have to diagram this beef. Normally, I don't have to diagram beefs to understand the beef. I think my ex-girlfriend's boyfriend held me down, but my ex-son-in-law was the one who beat me with a stick. And didn't just beat me with a stick, but beat me in the face with a stick. I think. Again.
Dude, my beef is with Washington County, dude. My freaking ex-girlfriend's boyfriend held me down while my freaking ex-son-in-law beat me in the face with a f***ing stick.
That's not a good call. No.
See, now I need to know. What kind of a stick? A hockey stick? A baseball bat? A 2x4? I don't know. I'm a big tree guy. I don't know if you know that about me. I'm a big tree guy. There are a lot of trees in Oregon. What kind of a stick? A stick from a tree? What kind of a tree? Hickory? Eucalyptus? Give me some demographic information here. How old is the ex-son-in-law? Who held you down again? Was it the son-in-law or was it the boyfriend? One more time, Alvin.
Beef is with Washington County, dude. My freaking ex-girlfriend's boyfriend held me down while my freaking ex-son-in-law beat me in the face with a f***ing stick.
All right, so I got a question.
No.
You don't like it. Maybe it's just me, Jason, but what did you do to all of them? I don't want to say, yeah, but you started it. But it sounds like not only do you have beef with the county, but all those folks have beef with you. If they're all holding you down, they're all exes, and they're all beating you. They're all exes. Listen to what you just said. My ex-girlfriend's boyfriend held me down, and my ex-son-in-law beat me in the face with a stick.
Dude, my beef is with Washington County, dude. My freaking ex-girlfriend's boyfriend held me down while my freaking ex-son-in-law beat me in the face with a f***ing stick.
I don't know, dude. Maybe it's not your fault. You don't like. Like, I want to say, like, you're acting like everybody's out to get you, but maybe they are. But then again, that might be your fault. If everybody's out to get you, what did you do to everybody? That sounds like, you know what that sounds like? Not a beef, but an ambush, right? Sounds like you went over to their house and they were waiting on it, man. They were ready for you with a stick to use to beat in your face. I mean, I wonder if they had like a Tonya Harding type meeting. All right, this is how this is going to go down. We're going to invite this guy over to the house for pizza. He's going to come through the door. You grab him. You hold him down. You get that stick over there, that stick that we saw outside. Bring it in the house. And then beat him in the face with it. Well, that segment definitely did come off the rails. All right, so let me, give me back my talk show.
Give me back my talk show.
Luke in Fort Collins. He tweets, quote, "Dude, I'd rather be dead than be friends with that guy." You ever watch shows and think to yourself, like, I mean legitimate shows, and think to yourself, man, I really want to be friends with that guy. And do you ever also watch shows and think to yourself, man, I would never want to be friends with that guy? That's Luke. Quote, "Dude, I would rather be dead than be friends with that guy." I don't know, Luke. Dead is forever. Are you sure? Rick in the 403, quote, "If you have an ex-son-in-law, your beef should be with your life choices." An ex-son-in-law. I mean, you almost even have to think about what that means, right? An ex-son-in-law. An ex, like, I don't even know what that means. Ex-son-in-law. I don't know, Jason, did you not cross that ex-son-in-law at some point? If he's beating you with a stick in the face, you probably deserved it. Or at least you got on the wrong side of him. I don't know, dude. I wouldn't have to pose all these questions if you had held it together long enough to get through the beef. But you didn't. Ariel Helwani is my guest. Ariel, what's going on? How are you?
Jim, it's always great to be on, but this week especially, I am fired up, Jim. I don't know which Helwani you're about to get here, because I got to tell you, I got a lot of hot takes, Jim, today.
That's what I'm talking about. That's the one that I want. That's the Helwani I want, man. Bring it. All right, so we're a few days out. UFC 257, I can hear it in your voice. You're pumped up. Poirier and McGregor 2 on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. How would you describe the excitement, the vibe, the anticipation leading up to this particular fight?
Well, if I'm being honest, I thought you were referring to what's going to go down on Sunday evening at Arrowhead Stadium as my Buffalo Bills punch their ticket to Tampa Bay and eventually win the Super Bowl. I thought you were going to ask me about the fact that we want the man, Patrick Mahomes, to be there because, you know, as Ric Flair once said, to be the man, Jim, you got to what? You got to what?
Beat the man.
That's right. So we want Patrick there Sunday evening at Arrowhead Stadium. We want their best because Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, the rest of the crew on the offensive side of things, led by the great Brian Daboll. It's a crime he's not a head coach. And then the defensive side of things, led by the great Leslie Frazier. It's a crime he's not a head coach. We got something special for those Kansas City Chiefs. But enough about that for now. Back to the fights. Yes, big fight. It's Conor McGregor returning. First time in a little over a year. Big fight for him. You know, 8 years ago, seven and a half years ago, he had to get by Dustin Poirier to become a featherweight contender. Fast forward, January 2021, he has to get by Dustin Poirier to become a lightweight contender. Very reminiscent of what Josh Allen has to do on Sunday evening. You see what I did there?
I see.
He has to get by Patrick Mahomes to punch his ticket and become a contender himself.
Dude, you got to settle down. It's going to be a long week, man. You got to get to Sunday night. There's a lot. Well, Saturday, then Sunday, but I can hear it. You're fired up. It's a big, big week. I did see exactly what you did there. All right, so talk about the rematch this time around. I mean, there's a lot to see in terms of similarity. You spoke to Conor recently. What was your sense as to his mood, his mindset, and what was your biggest takeaway from that conversation?
So if I'm being honest, right before the conversation, which, by the way, happened at 3:15 a.m. Eastern time, it was a very unique one. I was in New York. He was in Dubai. I thought that I was going to get an irritated Conor, an annoyed Conor, an upset Conor, one who felt like he was robbed of what could have been a great year. of course, due to the pandemic, but also due to some, you know, some politics, if you will, with the UFC. Instead, I got probably the most relaxed Conor that I ever talked to. I mean, he was wearing his, you know, familiar custom suit, but he was wearing slippers as well. He was slouched. He wasn't sitting there with his, you know, normal great posture and his intensity. He just seemed really calm, cool, collected, very happy, very at ease. Of course, I was wondering if he'd be a little irritated because he has to cut down to 155 for the first time since October of 2018. But, you know, I don't know how much you can read into all this. If I'm a Conor fan, I'm watching that, I'm like, wow, he's in a good spot. Mentally, physically, he looks to be in great spirits. And this was, you know, a little over a week before the fight. It seems like it's all coming together for him. We'll see what that translates into come Saturday night. But just from his demeanor and everything that he was kind of giving off to me on camera, it was by far the most relaxed Conor that I ever talked to before one of his fights.
We're talking to Ariel Helwani. All right, let me ask you about this. Earlier this week you said, and I quote, I'm sure the internet's going to get so mad at me for saying this. I think that Conor McGregor is one of the most underrated fighters in the history of the sport. End of quote. So Ariel, is that hot take, Ariel, or can you lay that out for me? And do you mean that from a technical standpoint and a historic standpoint? What do you mean by that?
And first, let me just clear up. There are no hot takes here. It's all real deal, Holyfield stuff. It's always the truth. Just like the great Howard Cosell once said, I always tell it like it is. Because, you know, there's sort of like an insinuation that a hot take is just a bunch of nonsense. With me, it's always legit. Now, why?
Dude, I thought you said at the start of the interview that who am I going to get? The Ariel Helwani or hot take Ariel Helwani?
You know what? I'm acting crazy this week. I'm sitting here wearing a Thurman Thomas jersey. I don't know what to do with myself. All right, Jim? I mean, it's been 26 years.
I understand, dude. We haven't even gotten into the Knicks, the roller coaster ride that is the Knicks, so I understand.
Listen, let's not get into Tom Thibodeau, Coach of the Year 2021. Let's not get crazy here, but it's the truth. Anyway, I love coming on the show because you bring out gems like that. I don't know who's responsible for this. Your great production staff, you, your researcher. It's just great stuff. You're always prepared, and that's why I love coming on.
The answer is yes. The answer is yes to your question.
Yes, all right. Okay.
You see what I did there? You see what I did there, Ariel? You see what I did there? You see why I'm in the Hall of Fame?
Listen, you're the man. You're the GOAT.
Continue.
What can I say? Anyway, back to the question. I feel like Conor doesn't get the respect that he deserves as a fighter. Put aside the fame, put aside the hoopla, put aside the trash, everything. You know what he brings to the table. As a fighter, skill-wise, the guy doesn't get enough credit. Like, he is a phenomenal fighter, and I think the fact that he hasn't been active, the fact that he had the high-profile loss to Khabib, to some a high-profile loss to Floyd Mayweather, has taken away from what this man has done thus far in his career. And, oh, by the way, he's still in his early 30s. He is a phenomenal striker. He doesn't get enough credit for his improved wrestling, and I just feel like we need to start giving this man his due. I think he is one of the best strikers to ever compete in mixed martial arts. I think he continues to evolve. I think he is a tough matchup for Dustin Poirier. We know what he did back in 2014. He beat him in a minute and 46 seconds. And I think that sometimes people hate him so much, he's so polarizing, they don't want to give him his due. Well, I'm here to say he is underrated. I know the internet can't come to terms with this, but it is true. And we need to start giving this man his due as a fighter. Everything else we could talk about, controversial, polarizing, yeah, that's all debatable. But as a fighter, he does not get his proper due, in my opinion.
I do not disagree with that, by the way. Ariel Helwani is joining us. Now, what about Poirier? I mean, you and I can talk on and on about Conor, understandably so. But Conor is dealing with a really, really tough fighter, really tough opponent who has some huge, huge wins. And this is no slouch. Based on your conversations with DC on the podcast, what is your sense as to where Dustin is mentally and psychologically at this moment? And how different is he now from their first fight?
So he has evolved tremendously. He's a much better fighter than the one who fought Conor back in 2014. The biggest difference is, in my opinion, his maturation. When he fought Conor the first time, he was young. He was angry. You know, there's a clip of him before the fight saying, I've never hated someone so much in my life. Like, you can't go into a fight with Conor McGregor like that. This time around, it's completely different. The vibes are different. They're buddy-buddy. Conor's donating to his charity. Their father's now. It's all different, and we'll see what that translates into. DC told me he spent some time with him in Vegas before they flew out to Abu Dhabi. I've talked to Dustin as well. He seems to be a lot less anxious. He seems to be a lot less fired up for this fight. But if I'm being honest, historically, you know, he doesn't necessarily win the big one. Yes, he has an interim title victory, but he never won the undisputed title, lost to Khabib, got knocked out by Conor, got knocked out by Michael Johnson. You know, he stumbled along the way in the big fight, and sometimes he was about to get a title shot back in the day against Korean Zombie, stumbled in that one too. So I'm curious, you know, Conor is the master at mind games, right? And tomorrow morning, there's a press conference. My prediction for the press conference is Connor's going to try to disarm him even more, buddy-buddy with him, much like he did with Donald Cerrone. He's not going to try to bring fire to the press conference like he did with Aldo or Mayweather. He's going to try to make it seem like they're buddies. Come Saturday, boom, attack him right out of the gate, and I hope that Dustin is ready for that.
Ariel Helwani is joining us. All right, so you mentioned Khabib. Let me ask you this. Khabib's brother, Umar, made his debut today. He won in the second round. What did you make of that performance?
He looked fantastic. You know, you got a glimpse of the future of the Nurmagomedov family. Khabib has been saying time and again, you know, you know this obviously, you know, the decision back in July of 2010 at the Boys and Girls Club in Stamford, Connecticut, you know, one of the biggest debacles in the history of sports announcements. Finally, it has been dropped down to number two. Number one is now what Dana White did on the broadcast on Saturday, claiming that he had an announcement to make regarding Khabib's future, claiming that he had a decision to announce to the world. And what did we get? We got nothing. That being said, we don't know about Khabib's future. We do know that his family members are really, really good. Umar looked phenomenal. He has another family member named Usman, who's going to debut for Bellator later on this year. He's got quote-unquote brothers named Islam Makhachev, who's about to fight in a couple of weeks, who's a phenomenal fighter as well. If Khabib never fights again and kind of transition into this coaching role, which is the role that his late father, Abdulmanap, occupied for so many years, he is primed to have a real army by his side because these guys are really good. We're going to be hearing about the Nurmagomedov family for a very long time, with or without Khabib fighting actively in the UFC.
So, what do you think, though, in your opinion? Like, Khabib, you're right. He could settle into that role. He'll be a brilliant coach. He's already building something amazing outside of his fighting career. We know he does not need the money. He could never get to the money I'm sure that he's already made. What do you think his motivation is? Do you think he wants that 30th fight? Do you think that if something spectacular were to happen Saturday night, that might motivate him enough for that fight? Or could he be looking at another fight?
Honestly, I kind of feel like we need to leave the guy alone. I feel like he was very clear about how he felt and what he wanted when he beat Justin Gaethje back in October of last year. He was emotional. He said his mother doesn't want him to fight without his dad by his side. And here we are 3 months later, and we continue to berate this guy and use him as this bait and a promotional tool and all this stuff. Like, why can't we just leave him be? He's in his early 30s. He hasn't taken a lot of damage. I think at some point, perhaps in 2022, maybe even 2023, he says, you know what, I'll go for that 30. I want to fight one more time. I want to do something spectacular. But maybe I'll fight two, three more times. But right now, it almost makes me uncomfortable that we're doing this whole song and dance with him. I feel like the UFC should just leave him alone. I'm not advocating for them to take the title away from him right now, because I've always believed you have a year to defend the belt. The guy just fought 3 months ago. No rush to take the belt away, but I don't understand why they're doing this. This fight on Saturday doesn't need Khabib as a promotional tool. Connor coming back, the big rematch, Dustin trying to avenge loss. It has enough. We'll see what happens afterwards, but I'll tell you what, Jim. I don't think the winner of this fight is fighting Khabib. Even if Khabib comes back and says, you know what, I am going to fight this year. The winner of this fight is not fighting Khabib. You know why? Because coming up in April is Ramadan. Khabib is a devout Muslim. He won't fight between now and April, that's for sure. He's not going to fight during Ramadan. He's not going to fight immediately after Ramadan. He'll probably, if in fact he fights this year, fight in the fall. Connor's not waiting until the fall. So we can worry about him later. Let's enjoy the fight on Saturday. Let's see who the winner gets. But I feel fairly confident in saying if it's Connor, it's not going to be Khabib, because Connor wants to be a lot more active this year than he was last year.
I think that's fair. He had that one fight to start the year, and then he did not fight again, and then the wheels came off and he was not happy about that.
Right.
All right, Ariel, last thought. If in fact Patrick Mahomes does play,
yes, in
your opinion, and try and be objective about this, I know you're a proud member of the Mafia, does Buffalo's best beat Kansas City's best on the road?
1,000%. The question to me isn't the question that you just asked. The question to me is it a 46-21 kind of game, or is it a 46-31 kind of game? The Buffalo Bills are a team of destiny, Jim Rome. And let me tell you something. You remember it very well. 30 years ago, Whitney Houston, God, America the Beautiful, all that stuff. What happened? Scott Norwood, wide right. Guess what? 30 years later, Tampa Bay, same city. We go back and we reclaim what we should have won in 1990, and then the entire history of the Buffalo Bills would have been completely different, because we would have won four straight as opposed to losing four straight. Well, guess what? That was then. This is now. Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, Devin Singletary, Micah Hyde, Sean McDermott, Jordan Poyer, the rest of the squad, we are ready. They have nothing for us. They're Frankie Edgar. They've been squeaking by decisions, right? They've been squeaking by decisions for the last few weeks. We're Francis Ngannou. We're knocking people out. We're sweeping the Patriots. We're beating the Steelers. We're doing what we did to Baltimore last year, last week. Everyone said they were going to run all over us. We're beating teams decisively. We wanted to go to Arrowhead. Oh, and guess what? One more thing for you. 1994, when they went to the Super Bowl for the last time, where did they win? Where did they go to win in 1994?
Tell me. Tampa.
Arrowhead Stadium. It's all coming together, Jimbo. It's all coming together. We're punching our golden ticket, just like I'll punch that golden ticket.
About time. All right, so don't forget about that golden ticket. You have that golden ticket. You've been in the habit of forgetting about that golden ticket. I'm glad you brought that up. So remember, you still have that. Dude, I don't even know you anymore. However, this sounds like this is the best weekend of your entire life.
Bills Mafia, I've been waiting for this. I'm a father, 38 years old, Jim. I have been waiting for this. My baseball team doesn't exist, the Montreal Expos. The Knicks are, we know who the Knicks are. I want one. Just give me one. If I've learned one thing, Jim, man to man, father to father right now, husband to husband, if I've learned one thing over the past year during this pandemic, it's that life is short. It is very short, and tomorrow isn't guaranteed. All I want is for the Buffalo Bills to be holding the Vince Lombardi Trophy come early February in Tampa. That is all I want. Please give it to me, and I will never ask for anything else again.
Ariel Helwani, we're going to find out, my man. You have yourself a great weekend, and I can't wait to see how it plays out. You've got a major fight on Saturday night. He's got his game coming up on Sunday. Where do you come out? What's your reaction? Ariel Helwani, thank you very much, dude.
Remember me on February 7th, Jim. Remember me when you're watching the Super Bowl.
Oh, I will.
And the Bills are hosting that trophy.
Good night now!